On the Commons is a weekly radio show dedicated to discussing the many issues surrounding mandatory common ownership developments. It is broadcast live from WEBR Fairfax, Virginia. Join us as we explore the world of common ownership developments, the fastest growing form of residential development in America today. This housing concept includes condominiums, cooperatives, and both attached and detached single family homes that are part of a mandatory homeowners association. Unfortunately, this type of housing is not as utopian as its advocates would have us believe. Living in a mandatory homeowners association means giving up part of the American dream. It means giving up constitutional rights and control over one's most valuable asset, one's home. Living in a mandatory homeowners association means leaving the American zone. WEBR Fairfax Radio, you're on the Commons. I'm Sue Bartholomew, and on the Commons with us today is, I swear, an angel. And Marianne Rosen's been a guest with us before, and Marianne is an attorney in Houston, Texas, who has saved people's houses from being foreclosed on. And she was on last year when she went to bat for Winona Blevins, the 82-year-old widow, and that we all followed very closely here and on the Commons. And she's also prevented another foreclosure just recently. Marianne, thank you so much for joining us today.
Well, thank you for inviting me.
You know, when I put out the ad for today's show, I said that you would be with us. I got a lot of questions. People want an update. We haven't heard from Winona. Could you let us know how she's doing?
She's doing great. I actually was with her about a week ago, and she is doing just fine. She and her cat Callie are happy to be back in the house. Of course, it will never be the same. Her life was totally disrupted for approximately a year. And being that age also, it takes a lot out of you. And it's been very hard for her to, you know, come back to where she had been previously. But she's doing great under the circumstances.
Would you let her know that we're thinking of her and that my listeners are constantly asking about her?
I certainly will.
I think they found her to be a particularly incredible lady.
She's very feisty. She is beautiful inside and out, and I think sort of became the poster child, if you will, for the horrible actions, the vice of the homeowners association, and I think caused a lot of people to sit up and draw attention to the serious problem confronting homeowners across the country.
She, you know, when we think about losing your house, we think about just being evicted. But what came out with Winona's story was that all of her belongings were taken as well. She was allowed to walk off with, 2 days' worth of clothes. But it wasn't just the physical house. It was everything that was in it.
True. All of her possessions were placed in a storage facility. And frankly, to this day, there are items that have never been returned to her and never will be. I mean, they're, you know, in the moving, things got lost, misplaced. The storage company, moving company, really didn't care about her possessions, and that's why I say it will never be the same for her. She had acquired many things, of course, as we all do over the years, that have a lot of sentimental value to us that can never be replaced.
The last time you were on, it seems to me you were suing the storage company because they had stored her stuff in inadequately protected storage bins or areas, and we're subject to the weather and mold and all sorts of stuff. How did that case proceed?
We worked out a very nice settlement with her furniture, that which there was being returned to her, and also a very, very nice settlement. It happens to be confidential, but I think it was one that she was very satisfied with.
So this was for her furniture?
Correct.
And the last thing we're going to talk about, and then we're going to move on to the new one. You were suing, and we talked about this the other day. You were also going to sue. You had a class action lawsuit that you had filed against the association because they had incorrectly increased assessments by a considerable sum. for a number of years and had over-assessed everyone.
Yes, we had what I think was a very valid class action lawsuit. We wound up dismissing the class action due to the fact that it would have caused maintenance fees for the homeowners of that association to be increased and indirectly would have punished those people. It did not appear that there was a law firm or an insurance company that we could hold responsible, or management company that we could hold responsible for this as we got into the books and records as it progressed. I think we could have won, but then we would have lost because the homeowners would have had to pay for this, and it would have gone in one pocket and out the other. So we wound up negating that class action lawsuit.
That's too bad, because the associations, and we've talked about this before, the associations have so much power.
All too much power.
Yeah. And yet when they make a mistake, as so many of them do, and you have pointed this out as well, that they often exceed the scope of their authority, then there's really very little recourse for the homeowners. They have to pay for it one way or the other, don't they?
Yes, and by the time the law firm adds on their attorney fees and late fees and collection fees, the amount becomes ridiculous. It's out of sight. The average homeowner, it's very difficult for them to fight it.
You recently had another foreclosure, and it was sort of a last-minute deal, right?
Yes, it was. I was contacted by one of our Texas legislators. This particular individual lived within his district, and the couple's home was to be sold at foreclosure the following morning at 10 o'clock. I didn't meet with the clients until 3 o'clock in the afternoon, and it was on the eve of this foreclosure. I was able to work out a payment plan that they were able to live with, but it was really unfortunate. Had I been able to get involved earlier, I think we could have perhaps set it aside, but it was too late to do that. And it was basically a maintenance fee of about $580 on an equity in a home of $60,000 that these people would have lost had we not been able to work out something. And I think that the attorney and the management company were willing to work something out because they knew that we would fight hard otherwise.
They didn't want a repeat, huh?
No, I don't think they did, but it's unfortunate we couldn't have gotten involved sooner, because I think we could have had an even better result. This particular couple, the situation had progressed is their mortgage company had been collecting, escrowing, and paying the maintenance fee. At one point in the late 1990s, I believe it was 99, the mortgage company stopped doing that but never notified the homeowner, so the homeowner assumed that the mortgage company was continuing to pay the maintenance fee, and that was not the case. They fell in arrears, and by the time late fees, collection fees, attorney fees were involved, the $580 had grown to approximately $3,300. So it just keeps escalating, and then the poor homeowner is confronted with an amount that is really unreasonable.
If the homeowners had $60,000 equity, is it because they had owned their house for a long time?
Or? Yes, they had owned their home for approximately 20 years.
And they all of a sudden there was a problem. And again, nobody notified them, right?
There was not appropriate notification on it.
So the association didn't pick up the phone and say, hey, you know what happened?
Well, there had been some notices sent, but as I say, the homeowner assumed that the mortgage company was paying it, and therefore, as they had done in the past, and therefore they didn't have to pay it.
Marion, you said that a legislator had called you to notify you of this?
Yes, this was someone who lived within his district and asked for some assistance on this matter.
So he had called his legislator? And his legislator then bumped him over to you.
That's correct.
And now, there has been a lot of, you know, foreclosures have been grabbing the headlines. We've had them here in Virginia. Of course, nothing has compared to Winona in Houston. But we've had them in North Carolina, we've had them in Arizona and California, and all over the country. Associations are foreclosing on homeowners for piddly little sums of money. Legislators have gone in and tried to take away the power or severely limit the power of associations to foreclose. There are currently some bills, some pending legislation in Texas. Do you have any idea what's going on there?
Yes, and this is, I do, and so far the legislature has not passed legislation favoring the homeowners. The homeowner associations have very powerful lobbies and powerful allies in our legislature, and it has been very difficult for our the good legislators who are trying to help homeowners to prevent the foreclosures from getting their bills passed.
So you've got a legislator who gets a call from a homeowner saying, look, they're foreclosing on me because they claim I'm in arrears for $580. Nobody told me about it. Now, this legislator is not, you know, is then going to have to go in and look at all this pending legislation and fight the special interests to come on and say, oh, well, if it wasn't for the power to foreclose, we wouldn't be able to maintain property value.
Well, this particular legislator was someone who is actively involved in trying to pass some favorable legislation for the homeowners in Texas. So he had a particular interest in this area.
Did you manage to get a whole lot of publicity for this case?
Not really. We had some television coverage on it, but it would be good if we had a lot more coverage because I think it would cause people who have not been confronted with this problem to appreciate what happens to a homeowner who is confronted with this problem. And it is all too easy for someone to lose their home over some either simple violation that the association is alleging or a small amount of money that may be due compared to the value that one has in their home.
In going back to this case, you know, it just really breaks my heart because when you have people who owe just $580, I mean, that should not break any association at all.
I agree with you, and it is really out of line with the number one, the equity in the home, the fact that these people had lived there for over 20 years, and it does not associate reality with the circumstances, and it becomes more of a power play that the associations are trying to push. They have all too much power.
Do you think that a lot of this is being used to sort of get rid of people they don't want? Is it discriminatory, do you think?
I think we see some circumstances where it is discriminatory, where the association is either trying to retaliate against, and I'm talking about the management company and some of the board members are trying to retaliate against someone that they may indeed want to make their life miserable so they'll move out of the neighborhood. We do see that.
And would it be, okay, but it would be a personal thing because they don't particularly like this person? Or would these people fall under the the fair housing protected categories like race, religion, handicap, familial status, you know, all of the traditional or all of the protected groups?
I see both. I mean, I've seen some circumstances that involve, for example, some handicapped people who maybe have a van. I mean, I had someone who was notified to move their van, and it's an ADA, you know, one of these vans with a lift on it,
mm-hmm.
to move someone in a wheelchair, which is ludicrous because they can't get their van in the garage. And so the association is saying that they're in violation, and I think in that case the association is violating the ADA, and if people do not know, it's Americans for Disabilities Act.
Mm-hmm.
But I think there are circumstances where there are biases and prejudices in addition to other factors. But, you know, we've had circumstances here in Texas where they didn't like the color of paint that was used on a house or on a door or a type of mailbox that was being used. Really, a lot of petty things.
They are petty. They're very, very petty. You had said the last time you were on that when you encounter a problem like this, probably one of the best things to do is to start digging into the governing documents, because 9 times out of 10 you're going to discover that the association itself is in violation of its own documents.
Yes, and I still maintain that. That was one of the tactics that we used in Ms. Blevin's case that I think enabled us to be as successful as we were. We got into the underlying documents and the procedures that the association, their law firm, and the management company had used. And that was a very important tool for us to use in winning that case.
Now, the settlement from the association is not confidential, right?
That's correct.
And you managed to get her a sizable chunk of money.
We did.
You want to tell
us? Actually, it was $300,000 was the amount of the settlement.
And if I remember correctly, the association attorney and the treasurer had to help pay for that, right?
It was, yes, they did. And, of course, that was $300,000 plus her home was returned to her.
So it cost the insurance companies, basically.
That's true. They did have insurance, both the law firm, the accountant, and the association had insurance that was responsible for this.
So between the three insurance companies, it cost them
$400,000. $300,000.
Plus there was $95,000 to Daniel Hillel, right?
That's correct.
So that's almost $400,000.
That is correct.
But presumably the homeowner, and then the homeowners are going to have to pay for it ultimately, whether it actually comes out of their pockets or whether it comes out of increased insurance premiums.
Well, for the homeowner's insurance, now that would not apply to the law firm or the accountant's insurance.
Yeah, the account.
But that's true. It probably would result in some increased premiums, but I think that's de minimis compared to the harm that was caused to Ms. Blevin.
Oh, no, I absolutely agree with you. But I guess the point I'm making is that there's little control that homeowners have in an association, because they're ultimately going to have to pay for the mistakes of the board. And even when homeowners go in and request to review the governing documents to look at the financial statements, they're denied that. They get the royal runaround. And the board has carte blanche. They play, you know, they do a lot of their business under cover of darkness, even though a lot of states have sunshine laws. But they still don't want the homeowners to know what's going on. And when all is said and done, it's the homeowners who have to pay.
Well, that's true. And I think if any homeowner is being denied the right to take a look at association books, I can't speak for other states, but I know in Texas, these are nonprofit, allegedly nonprofit corporations, and we have strict laws about requiring their books and records to be made available under various circumstances. So if someone's getting that kind of a runaround from their board, they really need to take a look at the law and continue to fight for the right to review those books and records.
But to fight for the right, it means hiring an attorney and going to court,
well,
right?
It does, and unless it may mean hiring an attorney, and of course that gets to be costly, but there's a certain amount of work that the homeowner, him or herself, can do in that regard.
So basically, I have
some pretty bright homeowners out there who I deal with who have personally gone in and pursued things and tried to get books and records and done some personal reviews themselves.
Now, these you were talking about the laws, and of course, we all know that none of the state real government agencies will get involved. Although there was somebody from the Texas Attorney General's office or state attorney's office who testified in a year ago and said that they would look into it. They don't often do that, do they?
Yeah, I think that we have a very fine Attorney General's office in Texas, and I would suggest to anyone from Texas who has a problem to contact the Attorney General, Greg Abbott, and I think that his office would look into assisting if anyone's having a problem getting hold of books and records. That's another avenue that someone can take without having to hire an attorney to do it.
Because sometimes you just can't afford it. I mean, you know, when you've got people who, well, you've dealt with a lot of people who just can't afford to do it. They live in small houses, not very expensive. They're barely making it.
And that, you know, we find so many of those cases also where the average homeowner just cannot afford it.
Should they have to? I mean, is it a requirement that if you live in a home that you ought to be able to, you ought to have to fight just to see what's affecting your home?
Can you restate that for me? I'm sorry. Okay.
Yeah, usually you buy a home and you think, this is my nest and this is where I'm going to raise my family and I'm king of the castle here. You know, I'm king of my home. But when you're in an association, you then have to fight for every little thing
that comes along. Unfortunately, you should be king and queen of the castle, but associations want to make you a pawn instead.
I like that. I like that. Have you got any advice for anyone who's being foreclosed on or who thinks they're being foreclosed on?
If they receive any sort of contact from the association, whether it's a telephone call, a letter, or whatever, excuse me, don't just let it sit unattended. Deal with it immediately, because the longer they wait to deal with the problem, it's not going to go away. It's only going to get worse. And if you can try to attack it at the early stage, it's going to be easier and less costly.
So basically, what should they do? Call the association?
Number one, I think they should call the association. If they disagree with some action the association is taking or some complaint the association is making, they need to deal with it immediately. I would say to begin by contacting the association. If it cannot be worked out with them, and ask to see where does it state in the association's bylaws, rules, or regulations that whatever is being complained about is really a violation. Are they being discriminated against? Are there other people who live within that group who are committing the same act, but they are not being told about it? You know, they're not registering a complaint about it. See if they're being singled out. And if they are being singled out, then they need to complain to the association about that. People need to start attending homeowners meetings, because by not becoming a voice in the association, they are allowing a lot of bad things to occur. They need to go and speak up at association meetings. The good people need to be getting elected to the board so that there are not these petty violations that are creating so many problems. If someone cannot resolve their problem, they may have to seek guidance of an attorney. But if it's a smaller, minor problem, it's going to be less costly to them to do that. So they should really stay involved in what's going on in their community.
Are you seeing more foreclosures that are a result of fines, you know, an action to collect fines?
I think that we are seeing a lot of foreclosures in Texas. Too many. I don't think that the number has been reduced.
Well, it's even if it doesn't, I mean, what some members of the industry, some special interest people will say is, oh, well, they just don't all go to foreclosure. But it doesn't have to go to foreclosure to make your life miserable.
No, it can still be extremely costly, even if it doesn't go to foreclosure.
And it can really sort of ruin your quality of life there for a while.
Well, because in addition to that, by the time it gets to the foreclosure, they have run the bill up so high with charging, you know, as I said before, late fees and collection fees and interest, and then they've got attorney fees and filing fees. I mean, there are throughout the country a lot of lawyers that make their living by doing only this type of work. And every time they write a letter or make a phone call, they bill for it. It doesn't get billed to the association. It gets billed to the account of the homeowner. So that keeps increasing the amount that the association wants from the homeowner.
Is that ethical? I mean, if the homeowner doesn't hire the attorney, and
I don't think it's unethical, because I think it's provided for generally in the association, and I won't say in every case, but in generally it's provided for in some of the rules and regulations of the association. Now, homeowners may be able to change some of that if they look into how they can, what kind of a vote it takes to change the bylaws or their rules and regulations.
So you're saying basically go in and amend it so that the association or the attorneys cannot charge them for these legal fees?
Well, I'm not saying in every case, but that may be something that could be revised in some way. But if homeowners don't take an interest in looking into what can be done, the practice is going to continue.
That's a good idea. I hadn't even thought about that. Okay, guys, go out there and change your governing documents. If the association wants to go after you and hire an attorney, they can pay for it. Of course, you'll ultimately pay for it, but that's a different story. Marianne, thanks so much for joining us. I know that you're a busy lady, and I thank you for taking time out from your busy schedule to keep in touch with us.
Enjoyed visiting with you and your listeners.
Thank you.
Have a great day.
Thanks, bye. And you're a real angel. And stay tuned, everybody, because we'll be back in just a minute. Just on the other side of this thing. Bye, Marianne. Thank you.
Well, I finally bought my dream home to enjoy retirement life. I've made new friends and buddies, lots of parties for my wife. It seemed that life was perfect, all my neighbors felt the same. Then along came death by CCRs, life's over, I'm fair game. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell.
WEBR Fairfax Radio, you're on the Commons. I'm Sue Bartholomew. I hope you all enjoyed hearing Marianne during the first half of the show. During the second half, you're going to hear an interview that we did about a year ago, right after Winona got her house back and moved in. And there were still a lot of issues that still needed to be ironed out, a lot of lawsuits that had been filed. Folks, it was a real mess. It's a show that I don't think many of you heard because we were having problems with the streaming at the time. And it's a show that I really think you need to hear, or you'll be interested in hearing. But here's what happens when you have an attorney like Marianne, an advocate for the elderly and an advocate for the homeowners, who's got what it takes to step in and turn things around. There's no way she can make up for the, you know, for the horrors that have taken place, but she did make up for it. Winona's back in her home, and I don't think anyone's gonna mess with her. But anyway, enjoy this interview. It's an oldie but goodie. On the Commons with me today is Marianne Rosen. Marianne is the Earth Angel who refused to look the other way when an 82-year-old widow by the name of Winona Blevins was dispossessed of her home and all of her belongings just simply because she was a little bit behind on her homeowner association dues. Marianne Rosen was the attorney who decided to... Hello, Marianne.
Hi.
How are you? Thank you so much for joining me, Marianne. I was just telling I was just telling our listeners today about Winona, and that you were the Earth Angel who stepped forward and defended her, and got not only defended her, but you got her house back for her, plus a nice settlement as well.
Well, we got her back at her house before Christmas, and we're very pleased about that.
That's wonderful. She must be absolutely thrilled.
She is.
And but it's been a long, it's been a pretty long and arduous journey to get there, hasn't it?
It has been, because she was evicted from her house the middle of April. So we've been struggling since then for victory. And I think finally, goodness triumphed over evil.
Why did it take so long, Marianne? Because you had a court date of, what, January 3rd?
Yeah, we did.
And couldn't they have settled this? Did they have to drag it out all year long?
Well, unfortunately, you know, when you get tied up in the court system, it just takes time, and you go through this whole discovery process, and there are some delays. But we, the last minute, the man who bought the house refused to go through with the settlement, increased his demands, and so it took a little bit longer to get it worked out. And on the eve of going to trial, January 3rd, we got it resolved before Christmas.
Who changed their tune? Did the buyer decide to take less, or did the...
The buyer wanted more.
The buyer wanted more.
Yes.
He had been offered, I think, $50,000.
He wound up receiving $95,000, actually. But as an interesting side note, he owed back taxes about $150,000.
Uh-huh.
So he has not gotten his money. It's been impounded in the registry of the court for him to pay back taxes.
But they didn't foreclose on him, did they?
Pardon me?
The city or county didn't foreclose on him to collect the back taxes, did they?
No, but what they did is they had the court impound the money for taxes that he's owed on other properties that he has acquired in this manner.
Right, but it's a much more humane way than Winona was dealt with.
Oh,
it's
you
the
know
point
that. Absolutely. She was not dealt with in a humane way at all.
No, and she's doing okay?
Yes, she is. It's taken a lot out of her. It's been a tremendous strain on her and her life to have been out of her house, particularly at this stage of her life. But she is so gratified by the outpouring of friendship from so many people, not only in Houston, but around the country. And I think you and your listeners have been responsible for that to a great extent.
Well, if we can help in any way, we're always ready to do so.
Thank you.
And I understand that you're taking this another step forward. You're actually filing a class action suit.
We filed our class action this past week as a result of the discovery that we went through on Winona's case. There were some other infractions that came to light, so we have filed a class action against the association for other reasons.
Can we explain to our listeners exactly what happened here? Because, I mean, some of the listeners have been following this, and they're well aware of what's been going on. However, a lot of the listeners have no idea what we're talking about.
Oh, okay. do you want me to go back as far as what happened to Ms. Blevins in this case?
If you like. I mean, we can just sort of talk a little bit about that. And
sure.
Go ahead.
Well, what happened is that she was delayed in paying her maintenance dues of a little over $800, was not aware that it had not been paid. There were a series of events as she'd been ill. She had some close friends who had been ill. She thought she had paid it, but had not. And the association foreclosed on her for those dues. She then tried to, after they filed suit, she actually paid more money to the association and thought that they had deposited her check, accepted the money, but indeed they had not, because they said it wasn't enough. And why? Because with attorney fees from having filed suit against her, you know, it stepped up the amount that was due, and she was unaware of that. They were sending letters to a Mr. Blevins, who her husband had been deceased for 20 years, so she doesn't open junk mail or mail that is addressed to someone other than herself.
Uh-huh.
She was never served with a lawsuit, and then unbeknownst to her, there was what we call a default judgment. The house was foreclosed on. It was sold at auction, and lo and behold, one morning the constable appeared and said, You're out of this house today. And she was in total shock. She did not know what had happened, didn't know what to do. Then I stepped in, and we got an injunction against disposing of all of her other property because they took all of her furniture and possessions out of the house when she was evicted from the house. And so it's been a long, hard struggle, but fortunately, we've been victorious.
I think you've done an incredible job. The settlement included, what, $300,000 cash?
Got her house back plus $300,000.
Plus the association had to come up with $95,000 to buy back the house. And they did this because they felt that the association deserved to get $800, right? And they ended up costing their homeowners somewhere in the neighborhood of $400,000.
That's true.
So it doesn't pay sometimes to be this aggressive, because hopefully there are more other Marianne's out there who'll come and slap you around a little bit. Good job, Marianne.
Thank you. We still have a piece of the litigation pending, which is against the storage company that moved all of her furniture out, and we're set for trial on that the early part of March.
Oh, so that's okay. What happened when Winona was on here very briefly, several months ago, and I think she just absolutely, everybody fell in love with her, and she was not feeling sorry for herself. She was very outgoing and just a real sweetheart. And I think what really broke everybody's heart was when she said, when it was all done, she says they wanted to take me to a homeless shelter.
They did. That's what happened before some of her friends took her in. They had called Adult Protective Services and were going to move her into a homeless shelter.
Geez.
She's a wonderful woman. She's very courageous. I always tell her I never see her feel sorry for herself. She just stands up and does. She's a very proud person, very strong, and amazingly so. And it's been a delight to get to know her. But I'm sorry for the process that caused us to get to know each other so well. But she is a very outstanding person.
She sounded like it when she was on here, and I've spoken to her on numerous occasions. I'll call her up just to say hi and, you know, how are you, and let's get an update. I knew that nothing had happened of significance in the case, but I just to talk to her and touch base and just let people know that I had spoken to her. Marianne, what happened to the jewelry? She said that some of the jewelry her deceased husband had given her was missing. Was that ever found?
It was recovered.
Oh, good.
She finally found that, so that was quite a relief for her.
Oh, yeah, because she did mention that when she was on the show.
Yes, we'd been unable to locate it, but then she was finally able to find it.
And all of her possessions have been ruined, basically, broken?
Yeah, many of them were totaled, unusable completely. There's the storage facility had mold, so a lot of the furniture and possessions have mold, will have to be remediated. In addition, many of the items were destroyed and need to be, you know, recovered, refinished, that sort of thing.
The mold.
So it's still a long struggle.
One of the articles that I read said that part of it was left out in the open.
It was not left out in the open, but it was not in a climate-controlled area. This particular facility is not a good facility. And that's why we're going to litigate over restoration of her belongings.
But she will get some of that stuff back.
Yes.
Part of the settlement also included, I had to get a giggle out of this. I'm sorry, I've got a strange sense of humor. But it says, in an out-of-court settlement finalized December 21st, Blevins was awarded $300,000 and annulment of all homeowner association fees through January 1. Well, didn't Hillel own the house at the time?
Well, that's true.
That was very generous of the association to overlook the assessments for that year.
We just want to be sure everything was paid up to date.
No, I saw that and I thought, wait a minute, they've got some gall if they come back to her and ask her for her assessment for the year. I mean, I wouldn't put it past them, Marianne. But
well, we tried to cover all of our bases.
You did. I would never have thought of that one. I think that was great. So Hillel was the sticking point, the guy who bought
yes.
the house. He all this time was the sticking point?
Well, for a while it was the association, but at the tail end of the resolution, it became the man who had bought the house.
The attorney who actually foreclosed no longer represents the association, is that correct?
True, and we sued them, and they had to pay part of the settlement.
Was it this 50-50 split, or was
it? No, it wasn't. I think between the attorneys and the accountant, they paid about $50,000, and the association paid about $250,000.
Oh,
I believe that was a split.
The accountant as well was involved.
Yes, because the accountant was the treasurer of the association.
Ooh.
So he was in a dual position, and he had some responsibility as well.
Doesn't that sound like a bit of a conflict of interest there?
Well, he became a precipitating factor in why they decided to go forward against her. So we felt that he had complicity in that. We sued him, as well as the attorneys who were involved in the actual foreclosure.
You're amazing. This is fantastic.
Well, thank you very much.
You don't know how many people are dying to get you to come and represent them. I'm getting calls from people in other states saying, I think Marianne will come here and represent me.
Oh, well, I appreciate it. You know, I found through this process, I have found that there are a lot of defects where association activities are concerned, and that if people will dig far enough, that they may very well find that there are some loopholes that they can be successful against the association, because you can't just accept the fact that the association and their attorneys have done the right thing and followed the law.
Oh, yeah.
And so a lot of these cases I've looked at, there are a lot of defects from legal technicalities that homeowners can argue against the homeowners association and the attorneys representing the association. You know, one of the sad things we're seeing in Texas, and it's probably throughout the country, is that perhaps where maintenance fees are due, it may be a small sum, but by the time the lawyers get through with filing suit and, you know, dragging it through the court system, what might have been a few hundred dollars then becomes a few thousand dollars, and it becomes a prohibitive factor
uh-huh.
for the homeowner, and the homeowner is not able to fight it, and too often they say, I'll just pay it. You know, it's kind of like, you know, pay the fine, but then they inherit all of these other problems. So it becomes very hard to fight, but I can just encourage people to ask their lawyers to please dig further into it and, you know, go back, look at the original documents that set up the subdivision and set up the association and the original maintenance fees, and take a look at what was required by vote to make changes. Was that actually followed? Because so often they don't even follow their own restrictions and guidelines, and they have violated those. And that's what we were able to find out in the Blevins case.
I guess there's no statute of limitations on doing something like that, is there?
I think you have to look at your individual state. There may be some statutes of limitation, but I think there are a lot of ways of getting around it.
Okay, this leads into the class action suit that you filed. And in the process of defending Winona, you discovered that the association had improperly increased the assessments?
Correct. In the original restrictions that were adopted in 1966, the maintenance fees were $72 a year. That was to be in effect for 30 years. However, in violation of that, in 1987, 9 years early, they increased the maintenance fees to $400 a year, $328 more than they should have been. So for a period of 9 years, at least, they were overcharging, and we submit that it's not even valid today because they've never had a proper vote on it, even to change what was allowed to be changed in 1996. So it was our position that all of the homeowners have overpaid, they've got credits in their account, and instead of Winona having owed maintenance fees, that she had overpaid. So we filed a class action for all of the residents who are affected by this in that subdivision. and we're asking the court to certify that as a class, and it will be interesting to see the outcome on this.
It's not everybody in the association, but only the members who lived there since 1987, is that correct?
Well, actually, it would affect anyone who lived there since 1987 or who owned property there during that time frame.
Okay, so you could technically get some of the people who have sold and moved.
Correct.
To join in the class action.
That's right, because they would have overpaid during that time frame.
That's something like that does not necessarily run with the ownership, current owners?
It would to some extent, but those people that paid during that time frame would have overpaid.
Mm-hmm.
So they would be entitled to a refund.
See, quite often what associations will do is they'll say, yes, we screwed up, yes, we made a mess, but, you know, we can't return the money because some people have moved and it's not fair to return it to some and not to everyone. Therefore, too bad. Lessons learned. Let's move on.
Well, the way a class action works, though, certainly at least in Texas, is that people have who are affected by it, and it will be for the court to determine, number one,
mm-hmm.
whether there is a class, and number two, those people who are affected by it. And then those people would be entitled to remuneration or some sort of credit, and it will be for the court to determine how that plays out.
And this is going to... So what do you think is going to happen? How do you think it'll fall out?
If the court follows the law, and if we see it, it's really going to be a question of law for the court to decide. We certainly feel that we're going to be victorious, or we wouldn't have filed the suit in the first place.
Yes, we're pulling for you, Marianne.
Thank you.
You don't know how much I hope you're victorious. Let me dovetail over here and shift to another slightly different topic. And this is one that I'm constantly asked. And I got a call on the way to the studio today from listeners wanting to know how one goes about finding an attorney to represent a homeowner, because many attorneys will not represent homeowners. The attorneys who represent associations, of course, I think there's a conflict of interest there, but some of them won't take a homeowner's case. And so you find a lot of homeowners who are stuck out there. They're either representing themselves pro se in court, or they're just rolling over, like you pointed out earlier.
Well, I think sometimes if you can perhaps check with a local bar association, and in my opinion, it takes a lawyer who will be technical and will try to fight. To me, it doesn't necessarily require an attorney who is a certified expert as far as real estate law is concerned. I think you really need someone who's willing to get in there, you know, say, bring it on and put up the dukes and start fighting.
Sort of get into the nitty-gritty, but how does one find one? Because a lot of attorneys will not touch homeowners association cases, and that's what I keep hearing from a lot of people. You know, they're having a hard time.
Well, you know, we're not having that problem in Houston. I mean, there are many lawyers here who have fought the homeowners associations. You know, sometimes maybe someone connected with the American Civil Liberties Union maybe of some help.
Mm-hmm.
We have found that sometimes we have legal foundations that do certain work. We have certain people that will help with that. There may be, if someone is a minority, and we find sometimes that there are minorities that are discriminated against,
mm-hmm.
in homeowners associations, that we have a large Hispanic community in Houston and a large African American community, and sometimes some of the organizations that fight for the rights of Hispanics and African Americans may have someone who will assist or can refer to someone in that regard. But as I say, we've had some of the ACLU people who've been helpful in the past trying to help.
I know there are a couple of them. I know that you've got David Kahn in Texas. I know there's Frank Askin in New Jersey, who's also taken on a really rather large case, actually, and is challenging this on a constitutional basis, which is exciting. So I'm hoping that'll be a great outcome. Again, quite often the ACLU will come back with, well, we're only limited to the government, and we're only limited to the First Amendment, and it's, you know, associations are private entities, and you agreed, and sorry, hey,
you're stuck.
Well, it's hard sometimes to find the right attorney who's going to be in there to fight for you, but you just have to try to search around for that.
These are some great ideas, actually. I will pass them on, and I know that many people are listening in today saying, you know, thank you for the advice. I thank you for that. A quick announcement, and that is that Senator John Lindsay has called for hearings about some of the foreclosures in Texas.
Yes, there's a hearing being held, public hearings being held on the 16th, is next week, and actually I'm going to be one of people who will testify, because he very strongly wants to see that we have new legislation in Texas, and so he is going around the state seeking information on that. And I think there's going to be a big push in the next Texas legislature to make some further changes.
That's good, because he was soundly defeated last year when the Community Associations Institute brought out the band and the traveling show and did their little number on how it would be detrimental to associations if they lost the power to foreclose. And I guess Senator Corona won on that one.
Well, he did, but part of his winning was the fact that the legislature in Texas waited until the 11th hour to make some changes or to try to bring about some changes. And I think that Ms. Liven's case was the impetus for something to be done, because, you know, sometimes the pendulum has to swing so far before people really stand up and their attention is brought to the problem. And Ms. Bliven's case was such an egregious situation, and it was such a compelling case that it made the legislators stand up and say, we need to do something about it. But the trouble is that in Texas, it was at the 11th hour, and there are certain requirements. You know, it's got to pass through the Senate, it's got to pass through the House committee, it's got to be read a certain number of times, and that could not be accomplished before the legislature went out of session. As far as I understand it, now there are senators and House representatives in Texas who want to start working on it now so that doesn't happen again. And in the next legislature, we have a meaningful bill that passes that benefits the homeowner. And we're going to work very diligently to see that that passes.
And what would the bill still allow associations? Do you think the bill would still allow associations to foreclose? Or is that a power that needs to be taken away from them?
You know, I don't know. I think that they are still going to leave the power in the association to foreclose because of certain statutes. I question whether they'll actually change that, but I think that what they might do at least is set up some strict requirements and require them to go through certain hoops before they can even get to that point. I mean, I would love for us to have a bill in Texas that would not allow homeowners associations to foreclose. I don't know if that can be accomplished.
And there seems to be, I mean, especially in Houston, now maybe it's the same around the country, and the rest of us have not been as good as Texans when it comes to going in and doing some hard work and digging, but the number of foreclosures or the number of filings is astronomical. It's up to, what, 11,000 now?
Oh, it has. I don't know the exact figure on it, but that's true. It has really climbed, and something's got to be done about it.
And even if they don't foreclose, Marianne, they use it as a threat. I mean, recently we heard the case. I don't know if you heard about the Mr. Chen and his oil slick.
No, I had not heard about that.
Oh, well, it was the Texas case, and Wendy Laubach discovered it.
Oh, okay.
And what it was they'd filed a foreclosure to collect $38 in costs. This was mailing costs and copying costs. And the reason they had incurred these costs was because they had sent a Mr. Chen letters telling him that he had an oil stain on his driveway. He had hired rent. It was a rent.